Good morning, friend. I am Cassandra. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a sugar addict. I'm a binge eater. I'm a volume eater. I am an overdoer of all of the things. And I'm really grateful to be here this morning. I don't know. I threw in a number of years ago the overdoer of all things when I heard it in a meeting once because it seems to accurately identify so much of what I do. Like, if I'm going to do it, I'm gonna make sure I'm the best at it, right? It's and so much of the black and white thinking of this disease has influenced everything that I've done in my life. If I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna be the best. If I'm gonna be a newcomer in OA, I'm gonna be the best newcomer in OA. And so that's how I came in 2020, was with the idea that I was gonna be the best. I was gonna win this. I was gonna beat this. I was gonna read all of the right things. I was gonna have all of the right answers. I was gonna be the one that knew all of the things, right? Because that's what I did in all other areas of my life. And I was just reflecting this morning while we were getting started about if you had told me 4 years ago that this is where I would be this morning, I would have told you you're out of your mother loving minds. Because there is not a chance that I would be living without sugar. There's not a chance that I'd be living without binge eating or compulsively eating or being present of mind, even though I didn't realize that I wasn't at that time. Because food has been my oldest friend, food has been my oldest supporter and soother and emotional support. Not pet, but I think you get the picture. I can tell you that my first compulsive bite was not even bite, my first compulsive memory, compulsively eating memory, was about 5 years old. And we were at my grandparents' house, and they always had like these big parties with all this food laid out, and I just kept going back and going back. And there's one thing specifically that to this day I could tell you would still call my name, which sounds crazy to normal eaters. Apparently, food doesn't call to them. It does to me. It talks to me. And I once it's in there, I can't get back out. And there's this particular food substance that would call to me. And I would just keep going back and going back and going back and couldn't understand why nobody else was there doing the same thing. And then I would get caught and then I would be ashamed and then I would be embarrassed because I didn't know that what I was doing was wrong per se, but I knew that I felt a level of shame about it. Turns out, most of my family are compulsive in a lot of different ways. So, food is not our only substance of choice. So, most of the adults were probably off partaking in other substances, which is why they weren't at the food table. So, the very first time I ever did a speaker share, they talk about where you come from, where you are today, and what's going on and how it's different. So, I do have one picture to share. I started a program in 2020, August 31st, 2020, actually. So, I always like to try to do a share right around my abstinent anniversary date. Just so happens that, like you guys have a speaker meeting every week. So, thank you for being here. I can remember right before I started program sitting on the couch eating and being like, it's always going to be this way. It's never, ever going to be anything different. My highest recorded weight probably happened sometime around high school, a little bit after. My highest recorded weight was probably about 350 pounds. I can guarantee you I'm higher at that than that. I just stopped weighing myself once we hit that mark. The picture that I have for you was taken July 2020, so I was close to 300 pounds again. Let's see, here we go. And then the side by side that I have was taken in July of this year. So there's been a bit of a difference. Like, I didn't even know that that full body picture of me existed until it popped up in my time hop. My husband and I were on a vacation, and he really at that time liked to take pictures of me for whatever reason. And so I ended up with this one. And then the one on the right was at a birthday party that we dressed up for. It was a 50s themed, and it was just so much fun. And at the time of the one on the left, I always thought that the reflection I saw in the mirror was always different than what I saw in photographs. I guess it's a form of body dysmorphia, but I always looked better in my head and in the mirror than what was reflected in photographs, better by my judgment. I guess it was just different because I wasn't willing to actually acknowledge the damage that I'd done to myself. I wasn't willing to actually look at the fact that people could see what I was doing to myself on my body, no matter how many times I gave others like weight loss tips, no matter how many times I would proclaim that I didn't eat all day long and then forgot to leave out the fact that I would go home and binge all night, things like that. It was seen, it was visible, but I couldn't see it because I wasn't willing to look at it. So, like I said, my first compulsive memory was like when I was like 5 years old. So that was a very long time ago. I can tell you that it didn't stop there. As a child, I was always bigger than everybody, like literally larger than everybody by like a foot. I'm 5'8" now, and I hit that in eighth grade. So I was always taller than all of the other kids in my class. And my first program was Naranon. So I'm also a codependent, which is really funny because that also popped up as a child. Like I would pick up all these little kids and carry them around because I don't know, I thought they were little and couldn't do it for themselves. I don't know what I was thinking. I just know that I used to get no-tome about that. I know that I hit 100 pounds in fifth or in when I was five because I got teased about it on the playground. And then it just progressed from there. Making interpersonal relationships was always very hard for me because I was so defensive all the time because I didn't want to get teased that I would try to make the joke first. But I would also get angry when the joke was made. So it became this very weird, like, give and take with my peers because some days I was okay and they were okay with me, and the other days they were not okay with me and I wasn't okay. My self-worth was very much hung up on the idea of what others thought of me. My mother always let me know that I was loved. She always was a very caring, loving, doting, and still is human being. But she was also very mentally ill when I was young, and I didn't really realize that was going on. It was very normal for me for mommy to sleep a lot or be up and like running around the house a lot. She always had very bizarre addictions, like Diet Pepsi. Like she's always had aspartame sort of dependency, nasal spray for a while there. And so I come by this addictive personality very honestly. My dad wasn't around a whole lot just because he worked all the time, but he also has his own addiction problems that he doesn't think are problems. They're both great people, and I knew that they did, and even now I know that they did the best that they could. I just also know that, like, while other people were busy sleeping or working, I was busy eating. My younger brother also was a bit depressed when I was growing up, so he and my mom would always be asleep. And I would be sitting with a bowl of breakfast substances until like 1 o'clock in the morning and reading books. I read a lot. It was always really great to be able to like leave this reality and hang out in a different one. So my family was very kind and loving. Very rarely I ever pointed out, wait, if they did, they thought they were doing it in a kind and loving way. The rest of the world was more than willing to let me know how ashamed I should be, though, how my weight was a reflection of the sort of person that I was. Adults were kind, children were not. And so that made me very reactive. So it made it difficult for me to learn what a normal friendship, a normal relationship should look like. So moving into college, when I actually met people that like just wanted to be my friend just because they did, I didn't know what to do with that. We spent a lot of nights at diners. We spent a lot of nights like going out doing different things. And it was actually really cool to be with other people who were different than me, but were okay with being different than me because growing up, everyone else was so much the same. I grew up in a very small community. There was like 32 kids in my graduating class, and if I didn't look like them, then I wasn't in the right place. And I did not look like them. Moving up through my adulthood, relationships with like romantic partnerships always were a very like touchy subject as well because it wasn't me. I had nothing to do with me. It had to do with the fact that I was heavy and that nobody would want me because I was heavy. It did not even occur to me that it, like my lack of like substantial relationships had anything to do with that mentality. No, it was because the other people were shallow and they had no interest in someone that looked like me. So I lived in a lot of self-pity, even though I would always consider myself a very optimistic person. There was so much just self-pity and self-loathing intertwined in there, which to look back at that is astounding. I remember a few years ago, after I'd started Naranon, I was talking to one of my bosses, and we were listening to like my coworkers complain, and everybody was upset about whatever they were upset about. And I looked at him and I was like, "Do I sound like that?" And he goes, "You sure did." And I was like, "Do I sound like that now?" And he was like, "You sure don't." And it was the difference between having a program and not having a program. It was the difference between living in gratitude as opposed to living in self-loathing. It's so easy for me to speak poorly. It takes work and mindfulness for me to speak positively and to look for the good in each day. And that I truly believe is what serenity is. And serenity is sanity, honestly. Like once I came into program in 2020, I was able to take or begin to take an honest look at what I've actually done with food and what I've done to the relationships around me. I have a living amends for my children because I have 3 daughters. I have they're now almost 13. She'll be 13 in a couple of weeks. An 11-year-old, and then an almost 3-year-old. She'll be 3 in a couple of weeks. And the mom that the 2 oldest ones got is not the mom that the little one's getting now. I was pregnant in program. I got pregnant in 2021. And that was terrifying. There's not a lot of support in these rooms that are openly spoken about for women who are pregnant in program. At least I haven't come across it yet. And like a lot of people, like working program is not that much different when you're pregnant, but there's so much, for me, there was so much more fear involved, especially since it was my third, especially since I know what I did with food for the first two. So I was not sure how I was ever going to make it through that abstinent, but somehow, by the grace of God, I did. I took it one day at a time. I tweaked where I needed to. That's the thing I really appreciate about the plan of eating in a way, and how the program works is it's all progressive. What my program looks like today is not what it looked like 4 years ago. Well, 3 years ago and 350 whatever days ago. It's changed, it's grown, and it changes and it grows with me because it doesn't have to be black and white. It doesn't have to be static, or it doesn't have to be stationary. Like, stationary is not a tool of program. Perfectionism is not a tool of program. These are not things that have to exist in order for me to maintain an abstinence. But what does have to exist is this willingness to understand that I am a terrible higher power. I've tried for years. I'm awful at it. However, I could tell you all the things that you needed to do with your life. I'd be more than happy to tell you all the ways that you could fix all the things that you needed to do. And I could actually make you like a concise list of all the areas that you should probably be working on. Also compulsive and also not accurate, true, or fair. I've come to discover that other adults don't like being told what to do. Go figure. I don't appreciate it. I'm not sure why I thought anyone else would. I've come to discover that if I just wait, if I'm willing to wait, if I'm willing to sit quietly, which is a very big challenge for me, if I'm willing to not act impulsively and in that moment, then sometimes things just kind of work out. And that for me has been one of the greatest gifts, is that intuition, because I used to think I was very intuitive. I used to think I was very empathic, which may or may not be true. It may or may not be. Knowing what I know now, because I actually ended up in not or Al-Anon, not Al-Anon. Where am I today? OA. I actually ended up in OA because I had to audit a 12-step group for one of my classes when I was doing my master's.
5 minutes.
And thank you. And in the back of my head, I heard you could go to OA, and I was like, no, I'm just gonna go back to my Naranon group and audit that group. It's safe. And I'd heard about OA in like 2012, but I ignored it, and I was offended when I heard about it. But I heard it again, you could go to OA, and I was like, all right, let me look around and see what I can find. And I found the OA Footsteps newcomer group at 11 a.m. on Sunday. And that was my very first meeting. And I went to my first meeting in my car behind a like a strip mall. And I sat there and I cried because I didn't want it to sound familiar. I did not want it to make sense. I did not want to be part of this. I did not want to feel at home because it was uncomfortable, because I was going to have to do something, because I'm a firm believer that once I know better, I have to do better. And now I know better. And today I'm so incredibly grateful that I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm so incredibly grateful that I have a program. I'm so incredibly grateful that I've been given this gift of sanity, of clarity, of weight. Because not everything I think is intuition is actually intuition. If I hear that little voice that says turn left and I take my will back, which happens almost every day, and I turn right, I just have to back up, turn around, and try going left. But if I wait and I sit there in it for just a minute, there's a good chance I'm going to turn left. So the first 3 months, my first 90 days in OA were probably some of the most difficult white knuckling days of my existence, especially in this program. But the longer I stayed, the easier it got. The longer I was here, the quieter things got. Things get a whole lot more simple the more I lean into program, which again, I'm grateful for that as well, because I'm the one that makes things difficult. I'm the one that gets caught up in my anxieties and my worries about the future and the what ifs and all of the noise that I could easily follow. But that's not the way it has to be. It doesn't have to be that hard. It doesn't have to be that scary. But when it is, it's usually because I choose it to be. So much is out of my control. This last year, my life kind of got turned upside down. And I was, if you told me 4 years ago where I'd be today, I would have said you were crazy. If you had told you me 1 year ago where I'd be today, I'd tell you you're out of your mind, because I knew some certain things to be fact a year ago.
2 minutes.
Thank you, Judy. They weren't fact. And that's the other thing. I had a moment a few months ago where I met with a paralegal looking at different avenues in case my marriage were to continue to deteriorate. And she told me this story about this woman that she had met years ago sitting out in the car like crying. And she's like, I walked up to her and I gave her this hug and I told her that everything happens in God's time. And as she's telling me the story, the grandfather clock behind me chimed. And it chimed with the same exact chime that used to be in my grandparents' living room when I was growing up. And that was my answer that day. Everything happens in God's time. Nothing's going to happen because I want it to or don't want it to. And that's okay. So for today, I'm grateful to have been here. I'm grateful to be a compulsive overeater and to be able to be with a room of people that make me feel like I'm at home no matter where I go. It doesn't matter what meeting I log into. It doesn't matter who I show up as that day. It's enough just to be here. And because of that, I'm just going to keep coming back, because when I was growing up, I always wanted to know where home was. I finally found home. So thank you all for being here. Thank you for letting me share. And with that, I pass.